Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Gay, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Family Secrets is a production of iHeartRadio.
I'm Danny Shapiro, and this is Family Secrets. The secrets that are kept from us, the secrets we keep from others, and the secrets we keep from ourselves.
In my family, the number 6 million had been ubiquitous. Grandma would use it as a non sequitur. When my father was growing up and claimed to be bored, Grandma would say, "Bored? When I was your age, we had no food. Your family is dead. 6 million Jews dead, and you're bored?" When I refused the fourth bowl of chicken soup, she pulled out the number as well. 6 million Jews die in the Holocaust, and you're not hungry? 6 million was printed on a poster that hung on their living room wall, greeting guests with that integer twisted up in a barbed wire Star of David.
That's Noah Letterman. As a journalist, Noah has written about travel, sports, even beer. But his deepest exploration is a memoir, A World Erased, a grandson's search for his family's Holocaust secrets.
I grew up in a town on Long Island, a pretty Jewish town. And my grandparents lived in Brighton Beach, New York. Probably moved there from like Canarsie, which is also in Brooklyn, maybe when I was 8 years old or something like that. And, you know, between Brighton Beach and Brooklyn and Great Neck, New York, I really sort of lived in these two very Jewish worlds, and they were quite different. I mean, Long Island was a nice suburban area, and Brighton Beach was a little more like a beach town, if you could picture it, in Brooklyn. So it was filled with all of these survivors and Jews from the old country, as well as various other populations, and it really just sort of always felt like I was moving between these two very different worlds. And whenever I was in Brighton Beach, I was always curious about all of these men and women who had these numbers, these tattoos scrawled on their arm. Most of my friends, all of their grandparents were born in America, where I had these two grandparents who had come from Europe, came with nothing, and really had all of their murdered family members hanging on the bedroom wall. So to visit with my grandparents and to see these numbers and to see these people who I had never known but should have been, you know, my great uncles and my great grandparents and cousins, however removed, it just left me with all of these questions. And so, you know, when a kid, I think, is denied stories and answers, it just makes them more curious. And I was always sort of like interested in my family's history on those trips to Brighton Beach.
How old do you remember being when you first actually noticed the numbers?
You know, I think growing up, the numbers always just seemed like they belonged there. And I think it was more striking to me when people didn't have the numbers on their arm. When I was really young, that's how I remember it. And then obviously I got to a point where, you know, I realized, oh, there are a lot of people of my grandparents' generation who don't have these numbers. And it obviously means something very different. And it's very unique in a very terrible sort of way. So I think I was always aware of the numbers, just the meaning of these digits on their arms changed for me.
Describe your grandmother for me.
So she was this very stubborn, domineering, and loving person. You know, she grew up in a time where she starved every day, and she made it her business to feed every single member of her family. You know, there's even a story of her inviting up a cab driver who dropped her off because the guy was hungry, so she felt it her duty to feed this guy. And, you know, she took feeding to the extremes. So she never sat down at the table to join us for a meal, but she always stood over us and hounded us to eat, eat, eat. And these were the commands that she always gave. And, you know, through food, she controlled us, and through food, she showed us her love. And she was just this, like, sweet woman if she loved you. And she could be, you know, quite the opposite if she didn't. But for every single member in the small family that she and my grandfather created in America, you know, she loved us all, and we could do no wrong in her eyes. So, that's sort of her in a nutshell.
That's great. And how about your grandfather? Describe your grandfather.
My grandfather was also loving. I called him Poppy. And, you know, he and I would spend our days whenever I would come over to visit playing cards. He'd always sort of let me win in the beginning and then, you know, show me that he still, you know, controlled the game at the end. And then if we weren't playing cards, we were watching wrestling on television. And, you know, he and my grandmother had this very interesting relationship where they just, you know, went at each other all the time. But you know, he always sort of let her win, but then he would look over at me, give me a little wink and a nod that let me know that he somehow, in his own way, had the upper hand at things, but he let her think that she was winning the fight. Mm-hmm. And I guess she probably also thought she was winning the fight, but you know, they I think they loved each other very much, but I never saw it expressed when I was there. It was just them going at it all the time. Mm. But, you know, toward the end of every fight, I guess, I shouldn't say I didn't see express, because at the end of every fight, she would always go over and say, you know, oh, my husband, and give him a little loving pinch or a meal.
In your book, pretty early in your book, you describe as a kid knowing that your grandparents had kept their stories secret. I think that was the line, actually, you know, and am I correct in remembering that you would, you know, sort of snoop around, kind of looking for what they didn't want to talk about?
Yeah. So as a kid, they kept all the stories from me. And the main reason for that was what I would learn later on is basically they told their children, so my father and my aunt, everything about what they had been through. And this traumatized my father and it traumatized my aunt. They had this like one shared nightmare of hearing goose stepping seeing this fog all around them and feeling like they couldn't move. And when they told my grandmother about it, she realized that this connected to the time where she was thrown from a barn loft and she couldn't move. And right after that, her mother was murdered while they were holding hands.
Just think about a nightmare so vivid and powerful, so connected to traumatic family history, that a brother and a sister actually dream the same recurring dream. Being the children of Holocaust survivors, the second generation, informs so much of the inner worlds of Noah's father and aunt.
My father actually slept with this suitcase packed beneath his bed because he sort of believed, not like, would the Nazis come to Brooklyn, New York? He was pretty certain of that. But, you know, will I be ready to run when they do arrive? So, you know, to have that sort of ingrained in your being when you live in a relatively safe place is pretty troubling. And my aunt, you know, I think partly because of the stories and maybe also to sort of challenge my grandmother's, you know, reign, she had all these eating disorders because it was sort of like the one thing that she could control, like not to eat her food that her mother forced onto her plate and sort of monitored that this would go down her throat. As far as, you know, who they were as adults and how these stories affected them, you know, my aunt was always seemed much more fragile than my father. And my father had a very, you know, he had a great sense of humor. And I think it was his way of just sort of deflecting. And when I started writing this book, and I would go to my aunt and father and ask all sorts of questions, everything was buried. Nothing was remembered.
Let's take a quick break here.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
parents? If you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Noah grows up in suburban Great Neck, but always in the shadow of what had transpired two generations before him, haunted by the stories his grandparents carried and the impact of those stories. He begins to internalize it as some kind of responsibility. If anyone in the family is going to unpack the history of his grandparents and what they went through, it's going to be him. Then, when Noah's 18, his grandpa dies, and he's afraid that all of his grandpa's stories will die with him.
I'd always been the grandchild, I think, with the most questions. When it came time to sit around at the meals, I was always trying to get nearest to my grandfather and ask the questions. But it wasn't until, I think, my grandfather died and I'm standing in the cemetery burying him, and I'm sort of looking around and I'm noticing that all of the gravestones have these Stars of David on them, appropriately, it's a Jewish cemetery. But inside those Stars of David, a lot of the tombstones had Holocaust survivor, written within the star. And I looked over at my grandfather's casket and then out at the cemetery, and it really felt like we were burying all of these stories, you know, all of these things that I would never learn, or so I felt at the time. Then later on that day and week, when we had the Shiva, all of my grandparents' friends started to come to the apartment. And, you know, these Holocaust survivors, they would like shuffle in and sit at the table. And for all the years I had known them, they always sat there and spoke in this like coded Yiddish. And, you know, it was probably comfortable for them to speak in Yiddish, but also it was convenient for them to not have to, you know, have this kid snooping in on their conversations and not have the burden of like damaging another young kid in the family. So they spoke in Yiddish, but at the Shiva, and you know, at this point I'm 18 years old, I think for my benefit, they started speaking in English and they started telling all of these stories about my grandfather.
Noah hears two incredible stories during the Shiva as the old Jews sit at the table noshing on bagels and lox. In the first story, his grandfather, who's working on the ship that's taking him and Noah's grandma to America, is accosted by a sailor.
My grandfather had a job on the ship, and this other sailor came up to him, and he was an anti-Semite, and basically just said, "It's a shame that you should see the end of this war." And then my grandfather knocks him out. And, you know, to me, that was just such like a phenomenal moment, because it's this little Jew who's standing up to this like 6'6" anti-Semite. And then, you know, when he's taken to the ship's captain just looks at the giant sailor and the little Jew and he laughs. But, you know, in my mind, I'm realizing, wow, this was like a really brave and tough man. And then that was confirmed for me even more when I learned this story that took place in the barn. And the barn story takes place during the Holocaust, when my grandfather is essentially hiding in this barn with a friend, and a Nazi walks in on him, and he demands my grandfather's boots. My grandfather, Poppy, he doesn't want to turn over his boots, so instead he tells his friend to extinguish the light, and he runs this pitchfork through the Nazi's throat and he leaves him dead there.
These stories make Noah hungry for more. He worries that now many of them are gone forever. His grandma falls into a period of mourning that lasts 5 years. During this time, she cries and wails her husband's name repeatedly and essentially waits to die herself. When Noah tries to speak with her about the past, she responds by saying, "Oy, it's too much." So when it comes to his grandparents' stories, he's now in a holding pattern. His father won't talk about it. His aunt won't talk about it. His grandma won't talk about it. After he graduates from college, Noah sets off to travel. He's a surfer, a detail I love about him, and he essentially follows the waves wherever they take him.
This was purely a trip to catch waves around the world, you know, so I essentially just had a backpack and a surfboard, and I was working jobs, saving up the money from those jobs, and just, you know, buying flights to the cheapest place I could go, and, you know, trying to live off like a few hundred bucks in a month in like Central America. And then I had buddies all over in like New Zealand and Australia, or I'd find work there. And, you know, it was just to sort of break away from the life I had known. And one of the things that I had always known in life is to trust nobody, you know, because I grew up with not my grandparents' stories, but the warnings sort of implied by their experiences and their histories. This idea that, you know, your own neighbors will turn on you. This idea that you'll never be safe in your own home. And I guess that, you know, in some way, which was never said to me, always kept from me, but somehow I understood that. When I went off on this trip, I didn't trust people. And I think that was sort of like one thing that had to change, you know, and I think overall it mostly did. I don't think you could ever change that completely, but, you know, I was sharing hostel rooms with other random strangers. I was, you know, hitchhiking through various Central American villages and cities and throughout Australia. And I guess, you know, at a certain point, I had to put my entire belief system aside and try something different to get by.
After a year, Noah's girlfriend, who was a year behind him in college, meets up with him in Europe. Money's tight, and they're getting by staying in hostels, cooking their own meals. But at some point, his girlfriend checks her ATM balance, and it's zero. She probably had been hacked or something.
You know, we realized that if we wanted to sustain any sort of global travel, we'd have to go farther east, because at the time, 2004, most of these countries were not on the euro. Things were really cheap in the east as compared to the west.
Farther east, inching dangerously close to the one country Noah was never, ever going to set foot in, the place where the atrocities happened to his family, Poland.
Started in Hungary, and in Hungary, I saw this new museum that was built, and it was really the first time in a year I'd seen this word, but it appeared on the side of the building, and it said Holocaust Museum, huge letters. Well, I walked into the museum, and we wound up sneaking into this private tour for these Americans. You know, they invited us to join them throughout the museum, and then when my girlfriend and I got to the Czech Republic, we saw the Josefov, which is the Jewish quarter in Prague. And it was preserved because Hitler wanted to create this sort of museum to an exterminated people. So, well, essentially all the synagogues are still there. And, you know, obviously he failed in his plan to commit, you know, full extermination. But it saved this little community or this little town. And then when I went to a concentration camp for the first time, you know, I started to have all these questions and feelings and memories of my grandparents sort of like flood back in.
Noah doesn't know what to do with these feelings and memories, so he reaches out to the one person who he thinks will understand what he's going through.
I sent this email to my father, but I also kind of half expected that he would just write back, like, leave me alone, I don't want to talk about it, as he always had when I was growing up. But oddly enough, he sends me this email with my grandparents' addresses in Poland and all the camps that they had been in. And I had never known this information existed. Like, I didn't know he knew any of the camps besides Auschwitz and Majdanek, because they were sort of like household names when I was growing up, you know, like whenever anybody would ask my father, like, what his parents had gone through, he'd say Auschwitz and Majdanek, and now let's not talk about it anymore.
Where had your father kept this list?
So he kept the list in the liquor cabinet. So I think if I was a little bit more daring as a young man and, you know, rebellious, I would have had access to this information.
Reaching for the vodka and instead finding the list of...
Yeah, or maybe it would have turned me off to alcohol. But in any case, I had their addresses, and I was one country away from Poland. And I thought, wait a minute, like, what could be there? You know, what could I find out? I can't shy away from this now. And so it was really the first time I had legitimate information. And so I kind of amended my one rule, and I went into Poland, and that's sort of where all of this became possible.
We're going to pause for a moment for a word from our sponsor.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on StoryButton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Increasingly, Noah's explorations make his inner world more and more populated by his lost relatives. He had always been haunted by a family photograph of his grandma's, of an enormous clan gathered around the Seder table at Passover, 30 of them.
There were no memories of these people because they just sort of like haunted us like ghosts, you know, hanging there in this one family photograph. And, you know, whenever I asked about who they were as a kid, my grandmother just summed it all up with the same word repeated three times every time. And it was just dead, dead, and dead, because that was everybody's story. Every single person in that photograph had been murdered except for my grandmother. And my grandfather had no photographs, and he also had no people left in his family either, because every single person had been murdered when his town was liquidated, you know. So I didn't even have names to attach to any of those people. And I think as I started to learn more, you know, and when I learned more because when I came back from Poland, my grandmother opened up. I went to her apartment in Brighton Beach, and I remember it being a nice day. Everybody was sort of like down on the beach, enjoying the ocean, playing volleyball and walking the boardwalk. And then there I am with my grandmother. She's crying to the ceiling still. She had this necklace made of my grandfather where he's like laser printed into gold, and she wears him around her neck like he's a god. And, you know, she would carry this photograph of him to every room in the house wherever she went. So it was both touching and pathetic. But this was like the life that she sort of subjected herself to. And it was just full of self-inflicted suffering. And, you know, to watch that for 30 minutes when everybody's enjoying the day outside and these two scenes are juxtaposed together, I couldn't take it anymore. So 10 minutes would go by, and, you know, 20 minutes would go by, and you'd just be watching the second hand on the clock tick past. And then so finally at the 30-minute mark, I just said to my grandmother, you know, I went to Poland. And I figured, you know, at first I shouldn't say anything like that because who knew what it would trigger. Her eyes lit up and she leaned forward and she asked me if I went to the Umschlingplatz. And she also had this like strange smile on her face. And I call it strange because the Umschlingplatz was the place that the Jews were transported from to basically their death. Pretty much everybody who went to the Umschlingplatz would die because they wound up in a concentration camp. This was not only just like this depot into the concentration camps, but it was really, you know, the depot into all of my grandparents' Holocaust stories. And, you know, from then on, we just sat at that table and she told me her stories.
What made her open up?
And I think it's because maybe she realized her time was running out and she wanted to tell her stories. Maybe it was because she was tired of suffering the way she had forced herself to suffer over the death of my grandfather. Or maybe it was, you know, she felt like I did what was necessary to understand her as much as I possibly could in, you know, the year 2004, you know, because obviously I'm a Jew from New York who has known a pretty, you know, easy life compared to what my grandparents had gone through. So there's no way to get anywhere near what they had experienced, but maybe she felt like, all right, I saw their house, I saw their street, I spoke to the neighbors who probably turned on them. So, you know, maybe I did what was necessary of a grandchild who is willing to take on the burden of the stories and the importance of the memories.
And how long after that did she pass away?
We had about 6 years where we sat at that table, you know, every week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however, you know, however long between visits. And we'd sit there for a couple hours or however long she could handle. And she would tell me her stories. And yeah, so 6 years of that.
I mean, what a gift that you gave her, you know, that she also gave you. But I'm imagining that you weren't looking at the second hand of a clock anymore. Like that it was, now there was, you know, like something broke open in her where she was able to speak about all this in a way that was very different from before.
It was like 2005, 2006. And I thought to myself, I'm going to write a book. Because I started getting answers to my questions and I figured, you know what, I'm going to write a book about my grandfather. Because to me, he'd always sort of been like this hero, right? Like the guy who I would learn would break out of a cattle car that went to Treblinka. Nobody escaped Treblinka, and yet here's this guy who escapes the cattle car going to Treblinka. Everyone who went to Treblinka died, but not him. Here is this guy who runs a pitchfork through some Nazi's neck. And lives to tell about it. Here's this guy who was part of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. He worked as a sewer rat, right? One of the guys who essentially broke out of the Warsaw Ghetto and traded for arms and food so that he could live to fight another day. And he was just such a phenomenal person and a tough guy. And I guess being a grandson, maybe there was something silly in me that just like I was more attracted to his stories than to hers for whatever reason. And so when I sat down with my grandmother to ask her questions, like, oh, tell me about Poppy in the Warsaw Ghetto, tell me about Poppy in Majdanek, which was a concentration camp, tell me about Poppy in Auschwitz, she just shrugged and said, you know, I don't know about Poppy in the Warsaw Ghetto, I don't know about Poppy here or there, but I could tell you about what happened to me there. And that was such a powerful moment for me. And to think that like my grandfather was, you know, capital S survivor and she was just this lady who survived was a ridiculous thing for me to think. And so, you know, I think she gave me a gift as well to just open my, not only to share her stories, but to open my eyes to like the reality of things.
There's one story Noah tells about his grandma now whenever anyone wants to know more about her, which sums up her courage and her conviction.
This one time in the Warsaw Ghetto, she is she's walking down the street and there's this bonfire and she could feel the heat even before she turns the corner. And when she does turn the corner and sees the fire and all this, these books burning, this Nazi says to her, I want you to go up into that building and bring down the books, throw down the books. So, you know, she complies, she goes up into the building, and she sees that these are books with her God's name in it. And, you know, she looks down at the book burning, and she says to herself, this is not something that she's going to take part in. So instead of throwing the books out the window, like the Nazi had instructed her to do, and as the Nazi was yelling for her to do when she looked out, she takes this little string and ties up the books and walks downstairs with them. And when she gets there, the Nazi points a gun in her face because she defied orders, and she just closes her eyes and accepts the bullet. And obviously that bullet never came, but the books were ripped out of her hands, and, you know, I guess in her mind, she did what she had to do to stand up for what she believed in. And that's sort of, you know, very telling about who she was as a person.
The Letterman story, like many stories of inherited trauma, is so much about the way that the aftermath of trauma shapes our lives from one generation to the next. When it's buried, hidden, pushed to the side, it festers and creates new difficulties. Suitcases beneath beds, shared nightmares, eating disorders. But then, sometimes it passes like a lit torch into the hands of a curious child who has questions he can't let go of. And that child grows up to research and report a story that restores dignity to the lost and gives his grandmother the gift, however painful, of having her own life witnessed and seen.
I think my father and my aunt have a newfound perspective on who their mother was. You know, I think they both found her to be very difficult. She was difficult, but, you know, at the same time, she was this person who went through such suffering to, you know, to survive the war and to create a life for generations that would follow. So I think, you know, every time my father would come home after my grandfather died and he was like cursing her for driving him crazy, because she did. She made his life miserable. And she said things that were very hurtful. He was just able to then like put it all in perspective and say, wow, like this is what she went through, and I could take a few punches from this lady who gave me life. So I think that was cathartic for him as well. And I think both of them just appreciated having these stories written, you know, having them recorded and having them have a future, you know, whether it's a wider audience or whether it's just my children when they grow up sitting down and saying, wow, these were my great-grandparents.
Noah has two young daughters who will never know those 30 people gathered around the Seder table, all the branches of their family who were killed. How will they metabolize the story of their ancestors? What kind of meaning will it have for them? And how does a family hold such a story generation after generation?
I think they'll maybe understand what the Jews, and more specifically, our family had gone through, but I'm sure that there's also like a mythical quality to reading a book about people that you've actually never met. So while, you know, my grandfather and my grandmother were real people to me, to them, you know, I guess they'll be sort of legends. And I guess if that's the only way to keep them alive for my children, then so be it. But I think there's also plenty for them to understand and to appreciate as far as like what it means to have great grandparents who had survived the Holocaust, and what it means to have such a small family, even though, you know, we're a few generations removed from it, it still lingers.
Many thanks to my guest, Noah Letterman. Noah is the author of A World Erased, A Grandson's Search for His Family's Holocaust Secrets. You can find him at noahletterman.com. Family Secrets is an iHeartMedia production. Dylan Fagan is the supervising producer. Lowell Brulanti is the audio engineer. And Julie Douglas is the executive producer. If you have a family secret you'd like to share, you can get in touch with us at listenermail@familysecretspodcast.com. And you can also find us on Instagram at Danny Ryder, and at Facebook at Family Secrets Pod, and Twitter at Fam Secrets Pod. For more about my book, Inheritance, visit DannyShapiro.com.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.